On Wells Tech Today, we are talking about slide design as we continue our review of the book Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. Sally has a great resource to share for anybody interested in sharing mobile safety tips with the parents and kids of the school. I'm sharing a project management tool, very cool tool, in fact. And we have a ton of listener feedback. All that and more coming up next. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network, sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast, and this is episode 275 for February 12th, 2013. You are listening or watching, perhaps, to a show that talks about technology and ministry and where those two intersect, and we have a good time doing it, and I don't do it alone. I'm almost always joined by the beautiful, the lovely, the talented Mrs. Sally Draper.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to join you here from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And we had ministry and technology meeting right here in Sleepy Eye this past Sunday because a lot of people couldn't make it to church. The weather has been kind of difficult.
In one of those winters, yes.
Yep. So normally we have maybe 10 connections to our live service each week as we stream it over the internet. But this past Sunday, we set a new record. We had 31 connections.
Holy cow.
A lot more people than that were watching. So, so that was really exciting to have that in place. So our members knew that they could still worship on this past Transfiguration Sunday. That's where ministry meets technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably one of the best use cases for live streaming. Normally I counsel congregations to, you know, really consider the cost and the effort necessary to do it live versus recording it and then posting it online. But for situations like that, I think there's a sense of togetherness and fellowship when people can be, you know, at least watching something at the same time that it's happening. So good for you guys. That's great.
So you got to change your counseling techniques if you're in the plains.
If you're in the Midwest, right? Yes.
Where the winds come sweeping through and develop blizzards, then yeah, live streaming all the way, folks.
We had an ice storm. We had an ice storm on Sunday morning here as well. So it was kind of a challenge. But well, that's kind of the way it is. And technology is our friend in some cases. And it's great that you were able to do that. So a couple days from Valentine's Day. Any big plans, Sally?
No. Big plans for Lent, though. Tomorrow is Ash Wednesday, yes. And that's always a wonderful time of reflection for us. And we actually do the imposition of ashes on the forehead, which is
really?
Neat tradition. We save our palm branches from Palm Sunday the year before and burn those to do the ashes on the forehead. It's just a really good time for reflection.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, blessings on your worship there and your Lenten journey. We have a journey of our own today, and that is a journey, continuation of the journey through a book that we've been reviewing and working through ourselves called Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds. It's a book that I've recommended for a number of years now, and one that I actually use as a required text for the Dynamic Classroom Presentations class that I teach at Martin Luther College, or online through Martin Luther College. And a book chock full of tips and guidelines and suggestions and best practices for putting together a presentation that people will get something out of, and that's really the point. And we are up to chapter 6 for those of you following along at home. And Sally, to me, chapter 6 is probably worth the price of the book all by itself. It's the biggest chapter. One of the reasons is there's a lot of before and after images in this one, and it's all about design. So he's showing a lot of what maybe a lot of us would consider decent slides as the before, but how much better they could be just by following some pretty simple rules and best practices about how to design a slide.
Yeah, the title of the chapter is Presentation Design Principles and Techniques, and he starts right away with the concept that design is not just something you put on, like the icing on a cake or the writing on top.
It's the thing that goes at the end, yeah.
Yeah. It's all part of it. And as he described, the fact that design is nuances and aesthetics that make the whole experience a lot more meaningful. Yeah, I could grasp some of that concept that you really have to put thought behind your layout, to deliver your message. A lot of times when I do a presentation, I start at the end and I think, what do I want them to walk away with? And what kind of path can I lead my participants down to get them there? And that's really, starting with the design that you want to build into your takeaways from the presentation. The design does that for you.
Yep. And the approach that is pretty consistent throughout the book, but definitely in this chapter, is attention to detail is important. And there is no such thing as kind of a throwaway slide or an interim slide or something that is just there kind of either as a bridge or an afterthought or whatever. Every slide needs to add something or move the story forward. And if you think of it in terms like that, then you really need to pay attention to everything that's on that slide. And one of the key principles is he talks about this signal to noise ratio. And really what that is trying to remove every non-essential element that's going to get in the way of the listener or viewer's mind as they're trying to connect what you're saying with what they're seeing and then commit that to their head or their heart.
Right. As he showed examples in this section, he avoided 3D graphs and things that just kind of jumped out at people and kept the graphs really simple, the text really simple, not a whole lot of imagery that didn't really have meaning added to the slides that he gave as examples here.
Yep. And speaking of imagery, big point here as well is visuals are better than bullet points. A picture is going to be better than words whenever possible, because that's just the way most of our minds work. It's difficult for somebody to listen to you and also read words on a slide at the same time. And that's just kind of how we're put together. But it's much easier for the listener to listen to the speaker say something, but then have it reinforced by an image and maybe a couple of simple words that bring out a key point in what that slide's all about. So images are absolutely essential.
Right. I think we've all sat through presentations where they just fill the slides with words. You have to squint to read it all. And you know that your mind goes to reading all those bullet points that are on those slides. And instead, if there's something really simple there, an image to support what the speaker is saying, our focus is much better directed toward the words and demonstration that the speaker is giving.
Yep. His next point, as we kind of move through some of the key points within this chapter, he talks a lot about empty space. And he says, empty space is not nothing. It's a powerful something. And how you use empty space is really important. The way your eye is drawn across a page or to what's on a page is really dictated by what is or isn't in empty space. And I think in all of us, there's that nascent need to put something in a space because it's empty feeling. And that's really not the idea here. It's to use that effectively because you really want to focus something. You want to focus the eye on something key or something specific on the slide versus everything on the slide. So don't be afraid to have empty space and use it effectively.
It definitely draws you to the interesting parts of the slide when there's empty space, for sure.
Yeah, and even how you position images on the slide. So if you've got some, and there's a couple of examples of this in the book as well. If you've got images where somebody is looking in a particular direction, make sure that they're not looking, let's say, off the page. So position them in a way that they're looking actually toward, let's say, a piece of text or something else inside the page versus having them looking off the page. Because, very interesting, because as you look at very famous paintings or famous photographs, the most interesting ones are the ones where the subject is actually leading you to the important point of the picture or the slide with their eyes.
Yeah. Regarding imagery, we probably should make note that we will have a lot of links in the show notes to different image locations, places where you can find stock imagery to use in your slide presentations. There's a lot of free ones out there, from Wikimedia Commons to Morgfile to Pixabay that we talked about last week that mm-hmm. Jason Schmidt recommended. And your favorite fee-based image site is iStock Photo,
iStock
right?
Photo, yep. I have some photos up there myself you can purchase.
Awesome. Yeah. So make sure and check out the show notes for those links and add them to your favorites somehow on Digo or wherever it is that you save links, because you will want to have those on hand when you're designing presentations. High quality photography is really important to the concepts that Gar outlines in this chapter. And he also recommends even like a full bleed. So your photo's not just sitting in a box small over on the side, but it is pretty much the background of the slide.
And that takes some time and some searching, because not every photo is going to be suitable for full bleed. When we say full bleed, it means it's corner to corner. I mean, the whole image or the whole slide is a picture. Mm-hmm. I guess as I'm teaching my online class, I see that a lot in a lot of the slides that get produced early on in the class, where they want to use imagery and they're using good imagery, but they're not filling the slide with it. It's still that white. There's still that a lot of space around the image where they're putting words, and they putting text over an image is really an art form that you have to work at. But it's not difficult using the technology, because you can use background, you know, boxes and whatever to highlight the text. And there's lots of different techniques. You just have to be careful where you put it and how you use it. But it also suggests that you don't want to use a lot of text. So let the image speak for itself. Use text where necessary, but try wherever possible to use an image that fills the entire slide. It's much more dynamic, and it's also better, especially for people's viewing pleasure, so to speak, so that, you know, those in the back of the room can actually see an image versus, you know, a small image down in the corner bottom right of your slide.
Definitely. Some specifics that he has in this section in the book are examples of using quotes over imagery. He has some real good ways to display quotes over imagery where the image backs up or supports the quote that you're trying to draw out. He also has examples, interestingly enough, about creating bilingual visuals where he has two different languages represented. Mm-hmm. And watching our Wells Connection for this month about translation committee work and things like that. You know, we are in a global society that we're dealing with a lot of different languages. So he has some great examples. Like you said, Martin, the examples in this chapter are definitely worth having your eyes on it, owning a copy of the book to see them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And maybe the last thing we should talk about is one of my favorites, and that's the rule of thirds. We've talked about this, I think, in our photography-focused podcast a while back. Same applies here with slide design. If you take your slide and divide it up into 9 segments, so it's kind of like a tic-tac-toe board, so you've got 2 vertical lines and 2 horizontal lines. The focal points, the key spots where you want to try and place the main point of the image, person's head, text, whatever it is, should be on one of those intersections. So you really have a couple of, you know, 4 spots really that should dominate where you maybe put content. And I think, again, the natural desire and the natural approach that we sometimes take is to put something where, you know, right in the middle, as opposed to dealing with this rule of thirds concept. And it's very easy to think through it in that regard, because you can see a big difference. And there's a couple of slides in here that show you, boy, this does make a difference in how the slide is laid out and where my eye goes and how aesthetically pleasing it is to the viewer. So
it's amazing that people think through all these things. And, you know, as we see maybe keynote speakers that come in and do just fabulous presentations, and all the work that goes into those presentations, all the design elements that are part of it.
You can tell. So, and that's why there's books written about this stuff. And we have a lot of teachers in our audience, and they're on stage every single day. So this may seem, I can imagine from a teacher's perspective, like, boy, this is a ton of work to be able to do this. But obviously the idea is to teach. And if the kids haven't learned, you haven't taught. And so it does take that time necessary. And clearly, if you can put together something that you can reuse, that's really a win-win. So put the time and effort and energy in up front, and maybe pick a class, or, you know, just pick a day a week where you're going to focus on this stuff. And then over time, you build up a beautiful library of slides.
Absolutely. Very inspiring. So we'll touch presentation again. Presentation Zen again next month. It's sample visuals, images, and text. So should be another interesting chapter coming up in March.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to ministry resources.
And this is actually a follow-up. If I can get my screen share to work correctly, I wanted to just circle back to the Glow blog. We talked about this maybe a month or so ago, that they had done it, pushed out an update to their software, and things were crashing and notes weren't syncing. So it was not well received in their user community at all. Just last week, they announced that they do have a new version of the Glow Bible available, and they want you to update all your devices with this new version that was pushed out. And it says there will be a period of time where their servers are resyncing. So if you're still not seeing all your notes, to give it a few days. They expect everything to be back in place and things to be good. And no more problems with the note synchronization issue that they were having before. So good news for Glow Bible users.
Yeah, I just did mine last night, preparing to teach a Bible class at our church, and I was using resources there and 100 megabyte download. So if you're going to update it, just make sure that you've got a little bit of time to do that. But it seemed like it was running faster than I remember it before, so it's probably worth getting that update. I don't take notes in the Glow Bible. I'd use other tools for that, but I can imagine for those who had spent a considerable amount of time investing in that, and it is a good feature, they had right to be upset.
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Great resource. If you haven't heard of Glow Bible, give it a try. There's a free version out there you can download, and also you can pay for a premium version that gives you some more lenses, as they say. Mm-hmm. Sally, it's about time for our Picks of the Week section, one of my favorite segments. What have you got for us this week?
Well, I am sharing my screen for those watching the video and highlighting the ptotoday.com website. I've talked about this website before, but for those of you in a parent-teacher organization, this is a great tech tool available to you. And one of the things they have available are different free school programs. Like this past Friday night, we had a science night at our school. I think I talked about that a few weeks ago, and used all their free resources, and it was just awesome. In the course of receiving email and things like that from the website, I came across a new resource available on their site. It's a downloadable PDF file, and it's called The Family Guide to Mobile Safety: How to Keep Your Children Safe and Connected in Today's Mobile World. And I think it's a great resource that you may want to link to or share with your parents in a school newsletter or something like that. It is done by AT&T, and they talk about things like, is your child ready for a mobile phone, teaching kids how to behave online, and establishing ground rules, especially like with cell phone usage and stuff like that. There's even a printable document called Safety Family Agreement, where you actually go over rules and the child and the parent discuss and sign it together. And there are other things included in this PDF as well, talking about texting and different apps and things like that. So I think it's short, it's done very professionally, and I think you would be pleased to use this as a resource, like I said, to post on your website or share with the parents in your school in whatever format you want to print it or whatever. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Check it out. Yeah.
I'm really impressed with PTO today. They do some really nice stuff. I used one of their presentations for Internet Safety Night, and they did a similar kind of thing. They tend to partner up with different businesses. So you said they went with AT&T there. The Internet Safety, I think they went with Norton or one of the antivirus software manufacturers. Maybe it was McAfee or whatever. But quality material, the imagery, how they've laid out each page it's really pleasant to read, and I think would be appealing for kids to read as well. And that's one of the points of the content there. But, you'd be stupid, I guess, not to use some of those resources because they've done all the work for you, and, they can make, great resources that, you can either use as a presentation or hand out and, you know, as a giveaway to parents and kids for PTO night or whatever. So
definitely.
Very good. Good pitch. Let me share my screen as well. My pick of the week is for you productivity folks. It is a website, a project management website that is free to use called Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O. And they've kind of taken off on the Pinterest craze, and you've got a bulletin board kind of approach where you put cards on a board, and you can have as many boards as you like. They give you a kind of a welcome board to get you started here. But the way it works is these individual cards are created, and you can create as many of these as you want, and you can move your cards around to different boards. And once you click on a card, it kind of flips over, and you can put all kinds of stuff on a card. You can put checklists, you can give due dates to cards, you can attach files, you can subscribe to cards, you get notifications. These can be member assigned, so you can have a team of people, you know, working on a card. I equate this kind of to projects. There's an activity list of who did what, so you can see how activities working against the card. I took the liberty of creating a board just for Wells Tech, and created a card for this episode. So you can do this both in the planning stage and also in the doing stage. So for instance, I created a card, and you know, we've got a due date of today for this week's podcast episode 275. I threw in our mind map as an attachment, and then I created a couple of checklists. So we have a pre-show task checklist, schedule interviews, conduct interviews, send questions to guests, conduct planning meeting, download interview from YouTube, add feedbacks to map, make picks, and then show day tasks, record the show, download music, download YouTube recording, create the audio, post to wells.net, email Sally with show times, notify guests, post to show notes page. And as you check these off, then obviously you can move these around and reorder them all to your heart's content. And it'll show you a little progress bar about how close you are to being done as you go through and check these off. So very, very, very cool tool. What I like, I think, most about it is its simplicity. It really makes things graphical and kind of fun. And then you can invite other people to join the card, and then they can come in and look at the card and be notified of activities and events as well. So it's kind of project management dumbed down, so to speak. And I think it would work well either as an individual tool for people in ministry, whether it's a school or class project or a ministry project in the pastor's office or in the church office, or even at the church leadership level where you've got different projects and you can have a different card for each project. Then everybody can kind of stay up to date on what has happened. So Sally, you could come into this card and see where I am in the production process. You know, I haven't posted to YouTube yet, and those kinds of things. And you can finally archive the card once it's all done to get it out of your way and always refer back to it. You can even have pre-populated checklists so that if we did a card for next week's show, 276, I could add a checklist and then base it off of a previous checklist. So I want to bring in pre-show tasks from from last week, and they all pop up just like they had before. So any repetitive projects that have the same action items could be pulled in, and then you can modify those. So cute little tool called Trello, very easy to use, free, and very flexible. You could use it for a lot of different ways, in a lot of different ways.
Can you have conversations around the project? So can you leave comments at all, or not a conversation?
There is, let's see, there is a description area. Let's see here. I haven't used it extensively, so I don't know the answer to that. But you know, that would be a valuable, I think that would be a valuable addition if they don't have that. So let me look into that.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah, write a comment right here.
There you go.
Yeah, so my first comment. And you could go, yeah, back and forth. Or
awesome.
It's your turn.
To sign up for an account. Try work. It out. Yeah.
And then you can see those flow through the activity thing here. So,
that's
so everything's
cool.
Captured, you know, nice and tidy on one card for each project that you do. So give it a shot.
Yeah, I think I will. Awesome.
All right. We should move along because we have, well, before we even actually get to the wealth of community feedback, we should probably talk about a couple things that are on the calendar.
Yep. Mark your calendar for these items of interest. Coming up on May 5th, I heard about a special concert that's going to be going on at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. They are actually kicking off their 150th anniversary celebration, which will go on during the 2013-2014 school year. But they're starting a little early with an end of school year concert, combining three choirs. They're going to have the Martin Luther College Choir and the Milwaukee Choir, and I can't remember the exact name of it. I'd have to look at the article again, but there's a chorale. In the Milwaukee area, conducted by Mary Prangy, I believe.
Yep.
And so all three of the choirs, the SIM Choir, the MLC Choir, and the Lutheran Chorale Choir from Milwaukee, will be singing at the seminary two concert times, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. There are no advance tickets or anything, so it's first come, first serve kind of thing. And they invite you to arrive early to get your seat for this special concert coming up on May 5th. I haven't heard if they're going to be live streamed or not, but hopefully we might be able to tune in that way as well.
Yep. I think we are doing one of those, and I don't remember which one. So just we'll update everybody as that information becomes available.
It's early. I just wanted to make sure you got it on your calendar because it sounds like a concert you don't want to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other date for the calendar is June 16th through 21st. And actually, it's not early for this because it's time to register for the Google Education Summit 2013 if you're interested in attending at Wisconsin Lutheran College. They did this last summer. Apparently, it was a big hit, and they're going to repeat it again this summer. They have some great speakers coming in. They have you get a Google Chromebook in the process. The standard rate is $1,950 to register, and registration closes May 31st. So along with a wonderful week and great experience, I'm sure you earn three college credits in the process from Wisconsin Lutheran College. So it looks like they're going to have a limit of 90 people in the summit. And if you want one of those slots, now's the time to get your act together and get registered for it.
Yeah, last year we had a couple of teachers from PSCO and they loved it. So well worth it.
Yeah, so great way to get a jump start on all the Google Apps administrative kind of functions so that you can make Google Chromebooks work in your school if you're interested.
Yep, very good. Now we should get to their feedback.
Okay, and we're doing something a little different with our feedback this week, organizing it around different topics. So right off the bat, there was some discussion about firewalls over on the Wells Tech listserv, and we are going to have a few links in our show notes to different firewall solutions that were recommended for schools, from Smoothwall that's available through the Shop Wells program and Greg Boggs, through OpenDNS, ComShift, and PFSense. All of them different solutions for protecting your your access to the world through the internet, through firewalls. So
out give and those in, a look. Yes. Keeping the bad guys out and making sure that it's a safe environment for especially the kids, you know, going out on the internet. So with things like content filtering, those kinds of things.
Next up in the category of mobile applications, Tom Rosenau tagged an article about Texas Instruments TI Inspire app available for the iPad. So Texas Instruments has gone mobile with their calculator functions, and it's a $30 app. So that's a lot more expensive than most apps. But then again,
cheaper than the calculator that I bought. I remember that's right. That.
Those calculators can get way steep in price. So if you're an iPad user, perhaps this is an alternative to buying one more device for graphic calculators.
You got a nice big screen. Boy, out. Where was that when I was in math class?
Yeah, for sure. Next up, I wanted to make mention of some Google news, a couple of things. Gail Potratz tweeted a link to an article about Google Forms, and I read a couple of articles on this as well. The Google Forms kind of got a reboot this past week, and it's a lot more functional. I actually have a couple of forms going for our local Suzuki violin school, and I definitely can attest to the fact that the form is a lot more user-friendly now, a lot more intuitive. In the past, you would design your form, and you'd have to kind of look for things like the thank you screen that comes up and things like that. I don't think a lot of people are even aware that you could have a thank you message, but now it's all integrated on the one form as you design it. And it's easy to get to the responses from the form. It's just a much improved tool. So kudos to Google for upping the ante with their forms tool. And you can do forms and gather data on all kinds of things with that tool.
Yeah, so. You can embed those forms too, can't you, Sally? Mm-hmm.
Right. Definitely. So you can use them on your own website directly.
And then all the results go back into a Google spreadsheet.
Spreadsheet, yeah. Which is shareable, so I'm able to share that in my situation with the violin teachers so they can see how many people signed up for recitals and things like that. So lots of uses for that.
How would you you probably would prefer Google Forms over the Final Web Forms, right? A little more flexible?
I think so. I guess it's a horse apiece. Is that what they call them? But I think there's some uses for Final Web Forms where it's integrated there and it does store the data for you as well. But with Google Forms, especially with the ability to share the results and things like that easily.
You can do a little bit of design stuff, as I recall, with Google Forms as well. You're not limited to kind of a one size fits all. You can have different templates, right?
Yeah, there's definitely some design templates to choose from.
So you can go nuts. All right. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, I'm glad Google's paying attention to that because that's one of the more useful features there.
Yeah, definitely. Also worth noting that Randy Nepson shared a link to the Google for Nonprofits blog. So if you're a nonprofit making use of Google Apps or whatever, you want to keep a pulse on what's going on and what new development is there, you'll want to follow the Google for Nonprofits blog. I also know I follow them on Google Plus, and they post a lot of things to Google Plus for nonprofits.
Yeah, I would Google for Nonprofits and Google for Education. Both of those have a Google Plus account that is very, both of them are very active and useful. They have all kinds of good tips and such.
Probably just another channel for their blog posts. So, you know, if you want to go to the blog, you can get it there as well. So good stuff from Google. All right, Martin, you shared a link to something about Pinterest, your favorite website.
Oh, of course. I'm always looking for Pinterest information. And this happens to be from a teacher's perspective on Pinterest, which was really the heart of our conversation a couple weeks ago when we had a show focused on this, is what's it good for? And this is a nice blog post from a teacher. It's called A Teacher's Perspective on Pinterest. And gives a nice bulleted list how you can use Pinterest in your classroom. That's kind of what I was looking for. What is it useful for? And I'm still looking for something quite, something similarly concrete for, you know, use in ministry, for instance, you know, for a church. I think those are out there. But this just kind of came across the wire, and I thought, boy, this is a great way to share with teachers in a very straightforward way. You know, what is it good for? How could you use it in your class? So I'm not going to go there. There's probably 7-8 different bullet points about how you could use Pinterest in the classroom or how a teacher could use Pinterest outside of the classroom for different things. But just refer to the show notes, and it's a quick read. It's only 8-9 paragraph blog, but worth the price of admission, which is free.
Very good. And then there were several different posts about EdTech type subjects. And one in particular I found interesting. I got from the CLS or Commission on Lutheran Schools e-news was a link to a Christlight survey. And Martin, you're probably more familiar with this than I am, but there's a group of people that put together a survey. There's your name right there in the results. And just kind of polled people about their use of technology in the classroom and their expectations for Christlight. Maybe you want to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was an interesting effort. I worked with MPH. There was a committee of us and some members of the Lutheran Schools Office, as you mentioned. MPH's primary interest in this was the next version of Christlight and what forms it should take and how digital it should be. Whether it should be on DVD or all online or subscription-based or lots of different technology-type questions. But they invited a few more of us in to expand the survey a little bit to get a better flavor of what's the state of technology in our schools. And the results were very interesting, and they had a good response rate. So we asked questions like, the ubiquity of broadband within your school. Is it in every classroom? Is it available to every student? Is it wireless? What's the state of one-to-one computing? Those types of questions. So not all of that is in that particular summary, but I think you can actually get at the full report with all the facts and figures. But Mark Buskey over at MPH did a nice job of summarizing the results there. And very interesting results. And I think the news from my vantage point was in general pretty positive. That broadband was pretty much everywhere, and that there are interested people in bringing technology into the classroom. The question is, how best to do that, and on what timetable, and at what cost, of course. But the survey was helpful. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, give it a read.
Awesome. All right. In the ed tech arena, continuing. We heard from Chad Kafka via Google Plus. Chad is someone we interviewed recently on the Wells Tech podcast, and he's launched a new podcast called Teacher Tech Talk. He and two others are talking about things they're seeing in the classroom. I listened to the first one and learned some things because they're actually tech coaches and involved in integrating technology in a couple of school districts in the Milwaukee or outer Milwaukee area. And so it's about a 30-minute show. That's what they're going to try to keep it to. And like I said, it's brand new. They just released their first one last week. But I think especially if you're in that role of tech coordinator, you could probably relate to the three commentators on this podcast. It's Chad Kafka, Judy Epke, and Tammy Lind, who are joining together for Teacher Tech Talk.
I've heard Tammy's name before. I don't know where it was. Yeah. Maybe I've heard her speak. And then, of course, we interviewed Chad. So good. It sounds like some excellent people on that podcast. Worth a listen. In addition to ours, of course.
Yep. All right, then a couple of just general web finds from our friends, our teacher friends. Ryan Rosenthal pointed us to Shakespeare Uncovered. It's from PBS Video, and it looks like a great video series about history, biography, iconic performances, new analysis, and personal passions of the different people that are hosting it. And they tell the stories behind Shakespeare's greatest plays. So good stuff for any English teacher out there. And then Tom Rose now pointed us to a website called Digitized, with an S in the spelling, manuscripts. And basically from, I want to say, the British Library's collection of different manuscripts that are available online in a digital format. They've got all kinds of ancient documents that they have scanned and made available online. So check those out.
Awesome. If you would like to contribute your own piece of feedback to the show that we can share on air, we would more than welcome that. And the best way to do that is to go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and use one of the many ways to communicate. You can add a note there or a comment. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. You can pin something on Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter. You can go on the listserv. So we saw some conversation there about firewalls this week. You can leave us a voicemail. What am I missing, Sally? Is that it?
Oh, I'm sure there's, well, we have a whole wiki set up, so you can document your own stuff and add it to our wiki. That would be awesome.
Yep. And we would welcome that. I think that is one of the greatest parts of what we've done here at Wells Tech is just to include that feedback and solicit it and share it. There's just a ton of stuff there. So, Sally, that's going to do it for the show today. Next week, we have an interview with a missionary, now administrator, I guess you'd call him, Brad Wardell, who's out in Tokyo, Japan, and with multi-language publications and leads the Asia Translators Group out there. And we're going to kind of have a show focused on collaborating on the web. So how do we get our heads together, so to speak, in a digital? How do you get our digital heads together? Maybe that'd be the show title. That's all next week. So you'll want to tune in for that.
Great tie into Wells Connection this month, because
that's right.
The translation work represented on the Wells Connection. And it, obviously collaborating on the web doesn't have to just be translation work. There's lots of ways that maybe congregations want to pull their members in, or their boards and committees, or pastors want to, you know, connect with other pastors or teachers with other teachers. And so lots of application for collaborative work on the web.
So now that we've whet your appetite, I'm sure you can't wait for next Tuesday. Let's close the show with the music of Cross to Glory, his song Rescued. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Comfort, there is peace. Where can it be? The world through the one, through Adam, the deed was done. Mankind sinned. Death is the wages of our sin, the punishment we find we're in. All have sinned. Surely I was sinful at birth, the measure of my total worth was stained with sin. I need someone to take my place, to take my sin and my disgrace. Oh, Lord, who can it be? Rescue me. As through the one man all died, but a loving God was on our side. He could save. Through the obedience of God's Son, Jesus the Christ, the righteous one, a declaration came. God declares the word is not guilty, that from our sin you and I are free. Jesus rescued me. God sent his Son to take my place, You took my sin and my disgrace. Oh, Lord, how can it be? Oh, Lord, you rescued me. Now I know the things I want to do, they're not the things I do. Now I know the things I hate to do, they are the things I do. Now I know what a wretched man I am. My thoughts, my tongue, my hands, rescue me. God sent a son to take my place. You took my sin and my disgrace. Oh, Lord, how can it be? Oh, Lord, you rescued me. I lay my sins upon your son, who was crushed, whose will was done to die for me. I look to you to lift me up, to strengthen me, to fill my cup with your grace. Your word cuts me like a knife. It is faith's source, my fount of life. Lord, strengthen me. God sent a son to take my place. He took my sin and my disgrace. Oh, Lord, how can it be? Oh, Lord, you rescued me. Oh, you rescued me.